TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Noam Chomsky, Racing to the Precipice. Within days of the public posting in early April 2017 of this one-hour speech, the downloads for YouTube alone exceeded 100,000. Noam Chomsky spoke with such critical passion and urgency that this talk should have the widest possible distribution. So TUC Radio will carry it as well. It's a combination of a no-holds-barred critique of the Trump administration under the auspices of climate change and nuclear danger. The reason why this March 23, 2017 speech has become so popular, I believe, is that it not only brings into focus the looming danger that can sometimes feel overwhelming, but puts it into context of history, global justice, indigenous rebellion, and equity. Chomsky investigates the reasons for our failure to address climate change, which he calls the most awesome challenge, with possible exception of nuclear, that we're facing today. And in this part one of the talk, he paints a picture of the U.S. under Trump, virtually alone in the world, heading actively for destruction, while most of the rest of the world is attempting to ward off catastrophe. It's easy to explain one part of the current wave of climate change denial, the monetary interests of the fossil fuel corporations involved, and of the banks and shareholders who benefit are all very transparent. But the questions of civilization, consciousness, of our sense of purpose, and the values we want to uphold in a society that is moving so rapidly towards the precipice, as Chomsky calls it, are much harder to define. All this is touched upon in this talk in a way that can be inspiring as well as sobering. Against the background of a diary of bad decisions, as well as important climate change facts, Chomsky is giving credit to thinkers and a body of ideas that can be so helpful. It's an analysis that can become the foundation of action and response. Noam Chomsky spoke at the MIT Star Forum on March 23, 2017. He was introduced as an American philosopher, historian, social critic, and political activist. He is Institute Professor Emeritus at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where he has worked since 1955, and is the author of over 100 books on topics such as war, politics, and mass media. Ideologically, he aligns with anarcho-syndicalism and libertarian socialism. Here's Noam Chomsky with the opening section of his talk, Racing to the Precipice.
For quite a few years, I've been intrigued by an interesting debate that took place about 25 years ago between two great scientists, Carl Sagan, Ernst Mayr. They were discussing the likelihood of finding intelligent life, extraterrestrial intelligent life. And Sagan, who looked at it from the point of view of an astrophysicist, calculated the number of planets, more or less like Earth, and concluded that the chances are quite high. Mayr, looking at it as a biologist, said, look, we have only one test case, namely Earth, which has had about 50 billion species, and we can raise the question whether what are the criteria for biological success on Earth with 50 billion cases to look at. And he pointed out that there is a striking regularity. The species that are successful, that a lot of them around basically, are those that mutate quickly, like bacteria, or those that have a fixed niche, like beetles, and they just stay there no matter what happens. And as you move up the scale of what we call intelligence, a biological success declines. So there are not many mammals, there are very few apes. The only reason there's a lot of cows is because we domesticate them. But by and large, biological success declines as intelligence increases. Humans look like an exception, but that's a statistical blip, just tiny moment of evolutionary time, last couple thousand years, actually. So his conclusion is that, I'll quote him, "The history of life on Earth refutes the claim that it is better to be smart than to be stupid." What it shows, in fact, is it's much better to be stupid than smart. That's the conclusion. He also points out that the average lifespan of a species is about 100,000 years. We've doubled it. We're about 200,000, so we're a little beyond the expected extinction point. Well, that's the question I want to consider today. Is it better to be smart than stupid? It was addressed recently by a very good Indian writer, Amitav Ghosh, has a book called The Great Derangement, Climate Change and the Unthinkable. And in fact, our failure to address the most awesome challenge of human history, with the possible exception of nuclear weapons, is indeed a true derangement and painful evidence for the plausibility of Meyer's thesis that it's better to be stupid than smart. Well, these are the two existential challenges that overwhelm anything else, completely overshadow all other discussions. And their severity and their imminence is illustrated graphically by the famous doomsday clock of the Bulletin of American Scientists. It was initiated in 1947, right at the dawn of the nuclear age. In 2015 and again in 2016, the hand was moved forward. Midnight means we're finished. The hand was moved forward to 3 minutes to midnight. That's the closest it had been to midnight since the early 1980s, when there was a major war scare in the early Reagan years. The reasons that they gave were the mounting threat of nuclear war and the failure to deal with climate change. I'll quote what they said is, at the time, the probability of global catastrophe is very high, and the actions needed to reduce the risks of disaster must be taken very soon. That was 2016. At the outset of the Trump term, they found, I'm quoting, the danger to be even greater, the need for action more urgent, and they moved the clock to 2.5 minutes to midnight. The clock is ticking, global danger looms. That's the closest to terminal disaster since 1953, when the United States and Russia exploded their H-bombs. Well, there is an important difference between these two existential threats. If, by some miracle, we escape nuclear disaster, and anyone who looks at the shocking record will realize that it's a miracle that we've gotten this far. But if by some miracle we do escape, at least we know in principle how to end the plague, get rid of the scourge. Global warming is different. It's inexorable. We might pass a point of no return when the damage that we've done is simply uncontrollable, irreversible, and it might not be far off. Well, the human species is right now undertaking an experiment to determine the answer to Ernst Mayr's question, is it better to be smart than stupid? And to examine, what I'd like to do now is to examine the course of the experiment just by picking a few dates. So let's start with today. Could be any day, but we'll start with today. If you looked at this morning's newspapers, you see a report on how we're dealing with the two existential crises. One on the nuclear threat. Christopher Ford, the National Security Council Senior Director for Weapons of Mass Destruction and Counterproliferation under the Trump administration, he advises that we should reconsider the unrealistic goal of a world without nuclear weapons that has been advocated, among others, by extremist peaksniks like Henry Kissinger, George Shultz, Sam Nunn, and William Perry. And the reason for abandoning this unrealistic goal of these utopians is Russia's increased aggressiveness, which is incidentally a charge that's dismantled quite effectively in the current issue of Radical Rag that's worth reading now and then, Foreign Affairs, the main establishment journal. On global warming, today, this morning, the National Snow and Ice Data Center reports that the Arctic has less sea ice at winter's end now than ever before. That means more dark ocean, hence more absorption of solar energy, more warming, and we're in a feedback loop, and you know what that means. The mean temperature for November was 23 degrees above normal, and at some points in the last couple of months, it went to more than 35 degrees warmer than normal. Well, that's today's good news. Let's go back to yesterday. Quote from the Washington Post. Water temperatures at the surface of the Gulf of Mexico and near South Florida are on fire. They spurred a historically warm winter from Houston to Miami. In the Gulf, the average sea surface temperature never fell below 73 degrees over the winter for the first time on record. Galveston, Texas has tied or broken an astonishing 33 record highs since November 1st, while neighboring Houston had its warmest winter on record. Both cities have witnessed precious few days with below normal temperatures since late fall, and on and on. Well, I apologize if this is unfair, but I can't refrain from quoting one of the comments by a reader on this news report. He says, "The Republicans have all this under control. The plan is to have Jeff Sessions and Ted Cruz's dad stand at the shoreline with Bibles in hand. As the sky darkens and the water rises, they will raise their left hand, holding the Bible, and command the seas to settle. And if that fails, plan B is to run like hell and to blame Obama." Which couldn't say it's better. It's a classic. And it captures the spirit of the times very accurately. Well, there was a second report yesterday in the business press, Bloomberg Business Week. The headline was, "The oil boom is back." And I'll quote it. "The number of oil and gas rigs drilling in the United States has almost doubled since bottoming out at the lowest level in more than 75 years of records. While two dozen nations are coordinating to cut oil production and rein in the global supply glut, U.S. producers are moving in the opposite direction. Over the last 4 months, output increased by 500,000 barrels a day, and if that rate of expansion continues, the shale boom will break new production records by summer. The U.S. now produces 9 million barrels a day." We're way in the lead. This illustrates a very crucial fact of current history. The world outside the United States is taking steps, halting steps, but steps towards facing the existential challenge to survival. And meanwhile, the United States, virtually alone, is racing towards destruction with enthusiasm and dedication, which is quite a remarkable fact. Now, of course, the oil industry has plenty of help in helping and moving as quickly as it can to destroy the chances for survival. The IMF reports that the fossil fuel industry extracts a $700 billion annual taxpayer subsidy, which is not in the crosshairs of Mike Mulvaney, I'm sure. And the industry doesn't take chances. In 2016, it spent $117 million in campaign contributions while fielding 720 lobbyists in Washington to make sure that Congress gets the message. And apparently it does. It's a recent Washington Post article which reports that many Republicans in Congress do recognize the severe threat of climate change, but they won't talk about it because of funding pressures from the fossil fuel industry. That's particularly true since Citizens United opened the floodgates even wider for a flood of corporate political funding, which means you toe the corporate line or you're out. Well, that's yesterday. These reports are quite typical of the daily fare. Pick almost any day, find similar things. Well, let's continue to review the experiment that humans are undertaking. I'll just pick a few recent dates from the last few months. So start with November 8th. That was an important day in history for several reasons. Several events took place on November 8th. One of them was very important. Second one was extremely important. And the third was absolutely astonishing. The very important one was the election in the United States. Plenty of coverage of that, so I don't have to talk about it. The extremely important one took place in Morocco. In Morocco, on November 8th, about 200 countries were gathering in, it's called COP22, the international conference under UN auspices to try to deal with the problem of global warming. The goal of the conference was to put some teeth into the Paris negotiations the year before, COP21, December 2015. Now that conference had aimed to establish a verifiable treaty, but it couldn't do it for one reason. The Republican Congress would not accept any binding commitments. So therefore the world had to settle for something less, namely informal agreements. And COP22 in Marrakesh, Morocco was supposed to carry this forward. Well, on November 8th, the conference began. On November 8th, the World Meteorological Association delivered a report, which in their words confirms that 2016 was the warmest year on record, a remarkable 1.1 degrees centigrade above the pre-industrial period, sharply above the previous record set the year before, and in fact approaching the desired limit that was set in Paris as the goal, and other dire reports, which I won't read, but you can pick them up on the internet if you want. Well, that was the World Meteorological Association. But then the deliberations essentially ended. The election results came in from the United States. The conference essentially stopped. Nothing more to discuss. The only question was whether it would be possible to salvage anything from the wreckage. With the world's most important country, the richest, most powerful country in world history, declare having all three branches of government committed to racing to destruction. What could be done? And there was some hope. They looked to one country as the possible savior, namely China. That was November 8th, the extremely important event on November 8th. The conference went on, but concluded without issue. Well, the third event was absolutely astonishing. Namely, the leader of the free world is leading the world to disaster. The world is looking to China to save it. And what's the reaction? Silence. Not a word about it. Pick up the newspapers on November 9th. Listen to BBC on November 9th and the days that followed, and you see nothing about this. Here's one of the most astounding events in history. The world's most powerful country in history, extraordinary advantages, incomparable, racing to lead the world to disaster, and the world is hoping that maybe China can somehow save us. Can you think of an event like that in history? Not a word about it. That's the astonishing fact of November 8th. Well, that's November 8th. Let's move forward to March 1st. Talk about both the world and the United States. In the world, a study was released showing that tens of thousands of miles of permafrost in northwest Canada are rapidly melting, along with accelerating decline of permafrost in Alaska, Siberia, and Scandinavia. And it pointed out that this could lead to massive, huge release of greenhouse gases, CO2 and methane, which is accelerated, of course, by the unprecedented Arctic heat wave, which gets radically worse every year. That's the world. In the United States, the Trump administration on March 1st decided to help the process along by rescinding the so-called methane rule, which limits release of methane from oil and gas drilling sites on federal lands. So that's a way of accelerating the oil boom and increasing the flow of methane into the atmosphere. Methane is far more dangerous than CO2, even though it's short-lived. There was also on March 1st announcements of sharp cuts in the Environmental Protection Agency staff and programs, and also an edict banning research. We don't want to learn about these things. That was March 1st. Now let's turn to March 16th, the world. A new study was released on the damage to the Great Barrier Reef, one of the world's greatest living structures, which is damage that's quite intensifying. And the report said that it's by far the most widespread and damaging of recent mass bleachings of coral reefs since 1998, with wide-ranging disastrous effects that most of you know about. Well, that was the world. The United States, on March 16th, the Trump budget was released. Environmental Protection Agency is virtually dismantled. It's now pretty much run by Senator Inhofe and his associates. Inhofe, for years, has been the leading climate change denier in the Senate. He's an extreme fundamentalist, and his position is that if God is warming the earth, so be it. It would be sacrilegious to interfere with God's will. That's the view in the most powerful, advanced, sophisticated country in the world. And that's the least of it. For action and research on climate, the EPA is actually a small actor. Far more important is the Department of Energy. It's now in the hands of a guy who had decided to get rid of it a couple of years ago before he learned that it controls nuclear weapons, so we better keep it. You know? But not entirely. The Office of Science, according to the budget, is in the Department of Energy, is scheduled to lose $900 million. That's nearly 20% of its budget. Its $300 million ARPA energy program is eliminated completely. Now, that's along with deep cuts in research programs at the EPA and the NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and also a 5% cut to NASA's Earth Science budget. Well, the budget generally is of unusual savagery, even for the Paul Ryan wing of the Republican establishment, which is effectively running the show now behind the Trump Spicer Twitter facade that's designed to grab the headlines every day. The budget, if you look at it, is a vicious attack on working class and the poor. It lavishes even more gifts on the wealthy and the corporate sector, and along with a process that you can only describe, I think, as the Talibanization of America, in accord with the Bannon, Sessions, DeVos ideal of a society which they've described based on Judeo-Christian tradition, white supremacy, destruction of the humanities, arts, and public schooling, and on the side, medical research. That's the goal towards which we're aiming at home while we race towards destruction internationally.
That was the first half of a one-hour talk by Noam Chomsky, Racing to the Precipice. He spoke at the STAR Forum at MIT on March 23, 2017. Noam Chomsky is Institute Professor Emeritus at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. There he has worked since 1955, and he's the author of over 100 books. Come back when TUC Radio returns for the conclusion of this talk. Chomsky will address climate by commenting on latest science, including the passing of 400 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere. That's considered a danger point. He also quotes Stephen Colbert on North Carolina's estimate that sea level might rise 39 inches. Followed by the passing of a law 2 years ago by Republican state legislators that banned anticipating any rise in sea level. Chomsky also addresses the climate aspects of the global refugee crisis and quotes the chief environmental scientist in Bangladesh. He says refugees should have the right to move to the countries from which the greenhouse gases are coming that are drowning their homes. Chomsky defines the Anthropocene, where human activity is dramatically changing the environment, and refers to the World Geological Society. They say that the nuclear age and the Anthropocene basically coincide. And he advances a very interesting definition of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, by quoting a study that claims that NATO's prime concern is now to manage the risk created by its very existence. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. While you're there, you can subscribe to weekly free podcasts. Downloads are free, and we appreciate any size donation to keep TUC Radio on the air. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.